At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Art of Craftsmanship podcast. My name is Dustin O'Hara, and I'm here with my brother and co-host Evan.
We're back. Hello.
We're back. I know it's been a little bit off and on over this last month, but you know, life is life, and you live it, and then people get free content when we are able to put it out. Hopefully that's once a week, sometimes not. All right, man, what do you got for us this morning-ish?
I got a couple kind of annoying quotes to a degree. I'll get your see what you think about them.
Okay.
It's more the style of the quote, not necessarily the quote itself. The first one is, if you don't learn to master your rage will become your master. The second one is, be yourself. So, be yourself.
But also learn to master yourself.
Well, they're not really not connected. I was just finding, thinking about ones I don't like. The rage and the master thing is a... people find where you can switch the two words and then it kind of makes sense.
Yeah, right.
Like, master rage, yeah. Rage master. Like, if you don't learn to... hump an egg can't hump you. Like, all you gotta do is switch the two, you know, words, and it sounds...
it's like a cheater's quote.
Yeah, it sounds interesting. Like, if you don't learn to play the keyboard will play you.
To play you.
Right, just come up with anything, and if you don't cut your grass, the grass will cut you. Like, all right. So I think those are cheater quotes.
Yeah.
Even though they sound interesting because they're fun to say. People like saying them, but they don't mean
much. They're poetic. Yeah. I mean, they get you thinking, right? You know, it's like,
right.
Like that.
I mean,
like
they do rage, work. Right? It's like, hey, what I'm saying can also be the opposite. Like, Sometimes you get the bear. Sometimes the bear gets you. Right. Sometimes the man gets you, you know, that type of thing.
Right. Yeah.
So it works sometimes, but sometimes it really doesn't work.
Yeah.
And then be yourself. It's interesting. It's nice to tell kids, to tell them, like, hey, you don't have to emulate everyone. You don't have to please everyone.
Right.
Be yourself kind of means like, hey, we've tried to teach you in a certain way what you know to be right and wrong, and how you are is good enough.
Right. Who you are is
right.
Know, that's good.
Yeah, but also be yourself to people who are terrible, terrible people. It's not good advice. It's not a good quote.
Yeah, maybe not be yourself if you're you know, Hitler.
Right. Look, or Adolf, Caligula. Just go be yourself. It's all right. Like, you can't tell it to a lot of people out there. Just go be yourself. It's like, no, you got to really work to not...
Yeah.
Whatever is right now... if that's yourself, you got to try to change it.
Right. Yeah. That's find something that you're passionate about and do that, as long as it's not hurting other people.
Be yourself.
Yeah. You said, that's like you said, you know, you tell kids to be themselves, you know, because you want them to build that self-confidence.
Yeah. I think that's definitely a quote for kids.
Right.
I think
once you get older, you have to be a part of a society. You know,
right. you're right.
Yeah, you're an important part of that society, but you're still a part of society. So you have to live in that space where you are.
It's right. It's more knowing yourself or understanding.
Right.
Like where you can improve and where you can change things and like, hey, I shouldn't act this way in this situation. I have to change a little bit here. So you can't just be yourself. It's definitely, I think that's for sure. That's a good point. It's like a childish.
Right.
It's a thing to tell a child.
Yeah, exactly. Because self-confidence is super important for everyone, you know, adults and children. Like you have to be confident in yourself so that way you're not looking to other people to make you who you are, which is the biggest thing that I've tried to teach Corinne. Is self-confidence, you know, because I think that's where, especially young women like fall into errors is when they're trying to find their, importance in other people, whether that's other girls or other guys or dates or who knows, you know, and I think that's why people get, you know, they get all weird about like, oh, you're the parent of a daughter, you know, you're dad of a daughter. Do you have your shotgun ready? Do you have your, you know, like all your axes ready? I'm like, I don't need any of that stuff. You know, I've taught my daughter to be super self-confident, you know? And so of course, like I'm going to be protective and, you know, if anyone ever does anything to my daughter, I'm going to be super protective of that. But I have confidence in the way that I raised her, that she's going to choose someone that's going to treat her well, you know? So I'll trust her, you know, of course I'll be, you know, my own critique of whoever she introduces to us, but I'm going to trust her to make the right decisions because I've instilled that in her, you know, that self-confidence, right? That she doesn't need people to make her feel good.
Right. You're hoping they can, but there's also, you know, you take them so far and then, you know, what happens. And then they just, for some reason, they're attached to someone who's not necessarily good for them, but they really like them because of this or that, or they're just really physically attracted to them. Then you're in trouble no matter what.
But again, you know, as long as, you know, you treat children well and you teach them to have self-confidence and be themselves, you know, then again, you're instilling them in that, like that quality of self-confidence that they're not looking to other people to make them feel special, that they know they're special.
Yeah. So it's, you know, so it's a good quote for kids and bad quote for adults, I think.
Well, yeah, I mean, I still think people need self-confidence, but they, like you said, they need
but
to
also,
they need to, yeah.
But for an adult,
they need to know that they're important as a person, but they also need to know that they're part of a society. Like you said, you know, it's more like know yourself and understand what your downfalls are and what your, you know, highlights are.
It's almost too broad of a term for an adult. Just be yourself. It's too simplistic.
Right.
It's something you kind of quickly tell a child to get an idea through, to get like some guardrails up. It's a helmet, kind of. Like, hey, just go, hey, be yourself, whatever, be yourself. You don't have to follow, you don't have to be like those kids. Just be yourself. Right. That's without explaining everything that goes along with it. You hope an adult already has that, and then they're not just necessarily, everything I do is right, this is my truth, blah, 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 blah. It's like, well, now you're an adult, though, so you got to figure out, not everything you do is right just because you like it, just because it feels good.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Like, yeah, there's a lot of things that feel good, and then you say, oh, this is me, this is what I like. Yeah, but it's terrible. Yeah.
Right.
Terrible for the people around you.
Right, exactly. Yeah, you have to be able to live, you know, in a society
where myself likes together. To sleep with a lot of women and not just my wife. That's my truth. That's how I be me, because that's what I want to do. It's like, well, you can't, though.
Yeah, God, you can do that. You just don't need to be married anymore.
That's him. That's definitely him. He's being himself, all right.
Yeah, right.
You know who he is.
Yeah, well, you know.
All right, so we have been, a lot of stuff been going on.
Yeah.
Running around like crazy, busy. You've been racing boats and going on vacations, cramming in your summers.
I know,
man. This is when we never get anything done, because I'm doing baseball and everything else, and I'm doing stuff on my, basically, off weekends. I got to basically work every other weekend, at least, and then during the week. So, you know, it's so much, we just have no room for anything.
So what have you been up to over the last couple weeks? So I guess we recorded 2 weeks ago. Before that, we had missed a couple weeks, but we've had an off week.
Yeah. Anything,
cool going.
Not, you know, it's been working, been doing
Yep.
Sports and back to Ravens. And tomorrow, I mean, today we're fitting this in during the kids' nap. And then my water heater just went up. So I got to see if I can magically do something downstairs. Which probably
to get that working again.
And then tomorrow I got two games. I got a Ravens preseason game in the morning and then an Orioles game at night. So that'll be a long day.
Yeah, right on. Man,
it's been
working back to back.
Yeah, all day from 8 a.m. is when I got to be at Ravens, and we usually, you know, leave our Orioles around 10 or 11 p.m.
So right. What time? What time are those games? Is it like a noon?
12 for Ravens and 7 and for six. Orioles. Dang. So there's not really any overlap at all.
Yeah, Baltimore getting it in.
Yeah.
Yeah, we went. Went to the game last night, which was fun because Corinne and her vocal group from her middle school sang the national anthem, mm-hmm. which is cool for, I think, what, the third time maybe.
Yeah.
And Nicole was, she thinks, she remembers back correctly that each time Corinne has sung the national anthem for the Orioles, they've won.
Wow.
So there's your good luck charm.
Yeah.
It was cool. When we got back to, when Corinne came back to our section, are the guy in our section, the kind of seating attendant who we call the hype man because we've been there a couple times when he's been there and he's always like getting everybody like chanting and stuff. Yeah. Either he heard us talking or he just saw Corinne's like yellow shirt and he was like, oh, were you singing the national anthem? She's like, yeah. So he like stood her up and turned around and was like, hey, section 92, you know, like Corinne just sang the national anthem. Let's hear it for her. And got a big cheer stuff, which was cool. Yeah, it was awesome. It was like everyone was showing all out and Corinne was like, yeah, waving. So it was fun. But yeah, it was a good game, man. And, you know, it was good to, I think that was the first time I've ever gone to a Red Sox game, which is pretty cool. So, and I was talking to Nicole about that, saying that it would have been fun to go to Fenway Park when we were up in New Hampshire because we were only like 45 minutes from Boston. But I drove by it a couple times, but never got a chance to go.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Yeah.
There's a few places I'd like to go and see a game. All the classic places, obviously, just to be there.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Not that I just necessarily care for Red Sox fans. But.
Yeah. I will say that, like, I mean, there weren't as many at the park as I thought there may be. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's nobody being stupid that I saw.
Well, it's because they're beat down.
Exactly.
They're in third place by 9 games. So
yeah.
A beat down fan is not threatening. A fan right, of a team who's winning or close to your team is obnoxious. Yeah. And that's when everyone comes out and there's a lot more people. And, like, we've had years and years of that full, you know, at least half Red Sox fans. Yeah. I mean, Yankees too, but Yankees fans almost had, they've had so much winning, they're a little bit calmer. They're obnoxious.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
But they're like, it's not like a new thing. Red Sox had been beaten for so long.
Right.
And they were calm. And then it's like you give them, it's like new money. They go crazy with it. Yankees are like the old oil barons. Like, settle down, rich people. You don't have to, you don't need the speedboat. You, like, just buy this nice house and be chill. We're all rich here. No, they went crazy. And they became super obnoxious. And then, also, you know, Philly fans weren't, they came down in huge numbers when we had them earlier this year. It was crazy. They were so loud.
Oh, man.
And there's some fights and stuff that went on in the stands.
Dang, really?
Yeah.
That's crazy. Yeah.
Sure.
I know, everyone starts drinking and getting, you know, excited and yelling. And especially when you have, like, I don't know. I mean, I feel like baseball is more of a family-friendly stadium experience.
Yeah.
Because of how many games there are and the games, you know, the tickets are cheaper. So it's like you're not going to take a whole family of kids to, like, a football game because they're hundreds of dollars per ticket. Yeah. But, you know, when you can spend $100 and get 5 tickets, you know, or something like that, to go to a baseball game and bring your whole family. And with Orioles and I think a lot of other stadiums around the country, they do, like, you know, kids are free or, like, kids nights and stuff. So
yeah,
that's when I get protective. You know, like, I don't care about people getting raucous, but if there are kids around and stuff and then, you know, then they're just like, hey, chill out. You know, like, you got to take it easy. There are too many kids around here to be doing that type of stuff. So
yeah.
I think that's when the fights start. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it was fun. It was always fun to go out to the stadium. It was a nice night. It was a little warm in the beginning because we were sitting on the sunny side, but yeah, it wasn't too bad, you know. Nice evening, and Orioles won, got a couple home runs, which was fun. We were actually out, Nicole and I were out getting some food when Cedric hit the home run off the top of the scoreboard.
Nice. Or off the
and
top.
And so, like, I watched it off the away flag scoreboard.
Yeah.
And so I was, like, watching that from the TVs, and I saw him start to run. I was like, oh, sweet, you know, off the away team scoreboard. So I thought I was like, yeah, he'll definitely get two out of this or whatever. And then he ran to, like, second base, and then I, like, looked up on the TV and I saw the ref at second, you know, like
the umpire, yeah,
swinging his hand around saying it was a home run. I was like, oh, sweet, it's a home run.
Yeah. He had hit off the top, you umpire, know, the top, yeah, cushion, basically. He went all the way up.
Yeah.
If you're on top of it, you're good. If you're on the side of it, you're...
Yeah, that was sweet. Yeah, man. And I don't know, did Gunner, I know he hit a home run. Did his go into the flat, out onto Utah Street?
Or was almost. It like, I think it hit the gate. So it was okay, heading that way in a hurry.
Yeah, I know. But that was cool. Weather got that was a good one, man. I was like, it was a bullet.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
Good stuff.
It was fun. Cool. So, for your hot water heater, I would suggest maybe looking at the heating elements, because
yeah, I already replaced those, or I at least replaced one, so I'm going to have to empty it, and I guess, I don't know, I just don't have the time today. I don't have time at all. We're going on vacation, like, next week, and I've got, like,
that's right,
9 or 10 games in between then and now. I don't know, maybe not that many. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, yeah, maybe, like, 9 games, and
dang,
Caitlin works every day, and... Just,
yeah, right.
We don't have time for it. Stupid. We might just wait until after.
Yeah, just
deal
right
with some metal tasting water and weird looking hot water. And
so you're still getting hot water. It's just funky.
Yeah, it's something. Is something metal's okay come off? It's like,
something
irony tasting or steel. Who knows what was broken off or what has rusted off? We might have to replace the whole thing. I don't know.
Right. Yeah. Well, I guess hopefully, you know, with, like, with cold water, you know, it's not going through the hot water heater, so you don't worry about that too much, you know. So it's just like, use your cold for whatever you need, and then, you know, just take showers in your iron shower.
Yeah.
Iron smelling shower. It's like when I take a shower after, like, grinding in the shop for a while, it smells like metal. Cole's like, you're in the shop grinding metal, it smells like metal in the house. Yeah, man. So Governor's Cup was a blast. I think that's what we were coming up on last time we recorded.
We didn't discuss it? I guess not.
We talked. Yeah, it was coming up, but we didn't actually, like, it was that weekend after. But yeah, we didn't do great, but we survived, which is good, because the race started off and the forecast was 15 to 18 with gusts in the low 20s, 22, 23, mm-hmm. 24. So we knew it was going to be a windy night, and that was projected, like, all night into the next day and everything. So we knew we'd have lots of wind. That amount of wind builds waves in the bay, which, you know, depending on when the wind picks up and when the tides turn and stuff, sometimes it can, like, sometimes it's not huge, but we had pretty good waves. Like, they weren't giant, but they were, you know, in the 4 to 5s all night long. So, you know, that's, or, you know, two, I would say anywhere between 2s and 3s, and occasionally you might get, like, a 4 or 5. But that's enough to, like, rock the boat, you know? Yeah. And, but fortunately, you know, our bigger boat and, you know, heavier and lots of people on board and stuff, it wasn't as bad as it was in the past on Relentless. Yeah. But yeah, we, you know, sailed down to Annapolis in the morning and had good wind then, and you know, and then started the race at 3:15, and we're cruising all night. You know, we like, I mean, at one point we might have been going like 4 or so knots, only because the wind slowed down a little bit, but really the wind stayed up the whole night. And this was Corinne's first Governor's Cup, which was fun. So she had a blast and, you know, like, pretty much just hung out on deck all night and slept here and there when she could, took little naps. But, like, so we started out, our Jack, our oldest helmsman, he's Charles's uncle. He started out the race, and we do 2 hour shifts on the helm. So he started out, and then Drew took over. By the middle to the end of Drew's shift, the wind had kind of slowed down to the like 10 to 15 with gusts in the high, you know, like 18 or so. So it was like really comfortable amount of, you know, speed and sailing, and we were still going pretty good. We were going upwind all night, which means the wind was blowing up the bay and we were sailing down the way, so we had to kind of tack back and forth. Mm-hmm. And when I took over on the helm for hours, what's that, like 5 and 6, the wind started to pick up. We were getting like gusts into the mid-20s and stuff. So by the end of my shift, so the beginning of, I guess maybe in Drew's shift or the end, maybe the beginning of my shift, we switched out. So we started the race with full sails. So full mainsail and then a big 155, which is the, you know, our biggest, head sail, front of the boat sail. By the end of my shift, we had put up a smaller sail on the front. So a 90, so it's only 90% of that front shape between the top of the mast, the front of the boat and the bottom of the mast, that triangle that's created. It fills up 90% of that. So we had that up. Because with our full sail, we were just getting knocked over too much, and we had just to let out our mainsail to dump a lot of the wind off that to be able to keep our boat from pushing, you know, heeling over too much. Okay. So we did that. We took down that sail, which was really good. So we had a full mainsail and the small sail, and we were still going, you know, average of 6 knots, 7 knots going upwind, which is really, it's just fast for our boat. That's really good. So then by the time at the end of my shift on the helm, the wind had picked up to, you know, gusts of the high 20s, you know, like, so 15 to 20 with gusts in the 25, 26. So we were getting pretty high wind, pretty high gusts. So right at the end of my shift, I suggest that we reef the main. So we did that. So you let the main down some and you tie a bunch of it to the boom, so that way it's not as big. So you take some sail area down. So at that point we had the small sail up and the reefed main. And that was at, let's see, so 3, that was 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. That was like 9 o'clock. And, at that point the waves were pretty big and the wind was gusting pretty high and we wanted to reef the main. So we all, like, you know, we put Jack back on the helm for a few minutes and, Charles was on the mainsail kind of flying that. But when you're changing, when you're reefing a sail, when you're reefing the mainsail, you need to get most of the wind off the sail, which means you have to point the boat up into the wind. Mm-hmm. So the wind's blowing straight onto the boat. And then by that point we already had big waves, you know, it was like the 3s to 5s, right? So we're just like, it's dark 'cause it's 9 o'clock. You know, we're all wearing life vests and stuff at this point. We got waves, but bang, you know, the whole boat's rocking up and down. The wind's howling and we're reefing the main. And so, you know, we let the main down, we pull it down, but then you got to get everything cinched down and attached right and kind of get everything as good as possible. And, you know, so it takes a lot of doing. It's not super complicated. It just takes a lot of like grunt work because you're kind of muscling this sail that wants to whip back and forth, you know, because it's got wind blowing on both sides of it. So I'm like doing that, you know, Sean and I were up and doing it and Drew, we're all working on it. And then, you know, we're all trying to get we're trying to hold on to the boom so that way we can get the sail down. And I look over to my right and there's like Corinne standing right next to me and she's like covered in like a half giant splash that just hit her. And she's like gritting her teeth and she's like holding the boom and pulling down on the sail. And it made me so proud. I was like, oh, look at her. Look at her up here, like working, you know, like helping out. Like, you know, I wouldn't have like thought any of less of her if she just like hung out on the rail, you know, and waited to the things to get settled. 'Cause we had people who could do it. We were all working on it. And also like our whole crew was up, you know, it wasn't just Corinne. It was like Corinne, Kim next to her and Justin and Tim and Drew and Sean and I, and Jack and Charles were like trying to maintain the boat, you know? So it was like, it was just a cool team effort and it was cool to look over and see everyone just working hard and trying to help out to get, you know, get something like that done, which is just a little bit of a chore in the middle of the night. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we got the main reefed and then we kind of got back going again. And, Charles took over the helm at that point. And in his 2 hour window, it went from like the 20s with gusts up to 30 to consistent 30s with gusts up to 40, which, is the most wind I've ever sailed in. And yeah, it was breezy and it was, I would say it was never really scary. I think like leading up to it, you know, we were looking pretty good. We kept checking the radar and we were seeing the storms coming, and most of the storms that came to us, you know, they're coming from the west and coming northwest in up into the Chesapeake Bay. And a lot of times what happens is when storms go from land to over water, they break up or they change, you know, because the pressure's different and stuff, the winds are different. So all the storms were kind of breaking up as they were hitting the bay, but the winds weren't diminishing. So we never got rain, which is awesome because we were expecting to get rain all night. But we never got rain, but we did get the high winds, and we saw coming. We knew that there was going to be a 40-mile gust. It was saying that they were seeing gusts of 40 right at the beginning of the storm. So we would see gusts of up to 40, but only for like 10 minutes. You know, it was just a high point.
Yeah.
But like I said, as the night went on, we just, you know, the crew and our kind of combined experience, we kept kind of, you know, going down in sail area as winds picked up and going down and down and down. And then like once, Charles was on the helm with the reefed main and then the small head sail, the small front sail, when the winds really started blowing up to like, you know, he's getting consistent gusts into the mid 30s or consistent wind in the mid 30s. And then, you know, the gust started to pick up. Then we just took down the front sail. So at that point we had just the mainsail up and reefed. So just a small mainsail mm-hmm. up. And fortunately the wind shifted a little bit further to the west. So we were sailing south, you know, southeast-ish, and the wind shifted more to the west. So instead of the wind coming into our face, it was coming on the side of our boat. So we were actually able to let the main out some and sail on a reach. So just basically sail straight down the bay for a bunch of hours, which was really nice. Cause, at that point, you know, boats really heel over and they feel unsafe when they're leaning, when they're going into the wind. So when you're off the wind, you can just let the sails out and the boat comes back to straight and you're just cruising along. So, you know, we felt very confident. I felt I could tell that the boat was happy with the amount of sail area we had up. It didn't feel stressed. It didn't feel like we heard the wind blowing through the rigging and stuff, but you know, the boat wasn't creaking or whatever. So, and we were still going 7 knots, you know, downwind, crashing through these giant waves and stuff, or, you know, off the wind. So, but yeah, and then so we did that for a couple hours, and then, you know, we kept trading off shifts, and then the wind kind of died down some. So we were putting back up stuff and eventually took out the reef and put the full main back up and finished the race. But, you know, there were 7 boats that raced with us, and we came in 5th out of 7. Mm. Physically, we came in 4th, but there was a boat that was slower than us, had a slower rating, but it was a bigger boat. I think maybe about like 7 or 8 feet bigger than us. I think they were in the mid to high 30-foot boat.
So that was all in your class? How many boats raced total?
I think it was like 75 or so in the full Annapolis leg of the Gov Cup, or maybe like 50 in the Annapolis leg, and then about 25 or so more that do. There are a few different legs that all finish in St. Mary's in the Potomac River, but they come from different places. There's like one group that comes from the south and one group that comes up the Potomac River, and then another group that comes just a shorter distance. So they've kind of combined these multiple races into one race, just different legs. But yeah, so we were kind of keeping track of the different boats. It was hard. There's a cool tracking program called Katak, KATAK. There's might be something like that, KATAYAK. I don't know. But it's cool because that, you know, everyone has the app on their phone on all the boats. You just set it up and then you just get it going. So that way it tracks you and everyone, you know, people watching from home can see all the different boats and where they are in the race. So, the boat that won our division, Oasis, their tracker showed that they had like turned around at one point. And so there were a few boats that, that didn't finish because of the high winds, you know, they just kind of turned and went back. But you know, we were one of the smaller boats in our division. So, you know, the bigger boats can handle more waves and more wind and stuff. So
right.
It's a little bit, and we kind of knew that early on. We were like, all right, this is going to be a really high wind race. You know, like what's our goal? Like our goal is to keep our boat moving and make it to the finish, but make sure we're all happy and safe throughout the race, you know? So our boat could have handled more sail area and we would have gone faster, but it would have been a harder night. You know, we all had to work a lot harder and we would have been less safe. So we were happy to make it through and our boat was happy and you know, it was a fun night on the water. But yeah, it was a blast and it was great to have Corinne there with me for the first time. So that was fun. She had a good time and Nicole came down to Medicine St. Mary's, and we hung out for the afternoon and stuff. And yeah, it was great. It was really fun.
Did
another successful year.
Did Corinne go back from the core? She boat back.
No, she boated back with us the next day. So yeah, so we had 9 race with us, and then 7 went back. Or so it was Charles. He fishes the White Marlin Open, which is that next week. So he always drives back, and then Tim. He wasn't feeling great, so he decided to catch the shuttle back to Annapolis. And then Sean ended up getting like a really bad migraine the night before we were heading back. So he actually rode back with Nicole. Missed the trip back. But yeah, and was that it? Yeah, everybody else did it back with us. So it was Kim and Justin and Drew, our brother, and Jack and Corinne and I. And yeah. On the way back, it was good. And the way back, you know, we had a south wind, so we had wind coming up the bay with us, so we were able to go along with it. But it was pretty much just a reach, and we always like to put up our big bimini. We have a bimini that goes over the whole back of the boat, and you know, pretty much keeps you from using the mainsail, which is fine because it keeps us under shade the whole day. And we had some nice wind that felt, you know, kept us cool, and we just put up our small sail in the front of the boat and had that kind of pulling us along. So we were motor sailing all day, and at some point the wind died or it was just like not enough, so we took down the sail and just cruising along. So yeah, had the race took us 15 hours and 5 minutes, so we started at 3:15 in the afternoon and finished at 6:20 in the morning. Got some cool pictures of us finishing. There was a photographer from St. Mary's College, and when we were eating breakfast once we got home, she came around to our table and she's like, "Hey, can I get a picture?" And so she got a picture of our whole crew. And then I was talking to her a little bit afterward, and she asked us like, what was our sail color when we finished and stuff. And so I told her that. And so she looked back through her pictures and she was like, "Oh, I got some pictures of you guys." Nice. So, she basically like takes tons of pictures and then just gives them to the St. Mary's media department, or whatever. And they put them up in their Flickr account. So I went in a couple of days later and looked and found that there were a bunch of pictures of our boat finishing and stuff, and our crew there, which was cool. So got those pictures. Yeah, it was great. But yeah. And then, I think we left at about 7 o'clock or so in the morning and got home maybe around 9 or 10. I forget exactly. So, you know, it's a long day, but it was pretty easy. And our friend Justin, actually, he made a...
American Giant makes great clothing, T-shirts, jeans, and more, right here in the U.S., creating jobs in towns and cities across the country. Support America's workers and get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app. Get packs of juicy red, green, black, or tricolor variety seedless grapes for $3.99 each. Then get tender boneless chuck roast or steaks for $4.99 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Not a pot roast. He made a roast. He got some meat and he marinated it, and then he cooked it. He sous vide cooked it. Mm-hmm. So like he did it in the water bath, right, for something like 24 hours, right, and then froze it and brought it down with him. So then on the way home for dinner, you know, at about whatever 6:30 or so, we had we have a little like butane stove on the boat, and I brought a cast iron pan, and he like seared the meat. He seared it and cut into thin strips and made us all like these like brisket sandwiches. Oh my gosh, nice. They were so good. They were like so juicy and delicious. Oh man, it was like gourmet cooking on our little boat on the way back. It was so good. And the wind had like just died down just enough, so it was easy. You know, it was like flat, pretty much flat water, and you know, not too like, you know, just a couple knots of wind. So it was just right.
But yeah, this was the first Governor's Cup that I can remember that I've ever actually stayed up all the way through the night. I think it was just stressful enough, you know, that it like I couldn't sleep at all, and you know, I never felt tired throughout the race, which is good. So just kind of like, you know, stayed up. Charles and I stayed up. Everybody else, you know, took intermittent naps and stuff here and there when they could. Obviously, like the crew that's not doing a ton of work because it was mostly an upwind race, so it wasn't like we had a ton of, you know, when you're doing downwind, there's like, you know, spinnaker changes and sail changes stuff, which we had a couple of. But you know, when it's a 15-hour race and you tack a dozen times and change a couple sails, you know, there's a lot of just downtime. So, yeah, it was cool. It was fun. It was a good race, and it was just really, it was cool to see our crew sail through, you know, that much wind. And then also really like it felt good to know that our boat could handle that type of wind with the right amount of sail up, you know, with the right amount of experience on crew, and you know how to, you know what your boat can take, and you can change your sails around. Like, boats can handle a ton of wind, because 40 knots, you know, 40 miles an hour wind is a lot of wind, you know. It's like crazy, you know. And if you don't know what you're doing and you have a lot of wind, a lot of sails up, you know, that wind can easily just blow your boat right over, you know. Even big boats that with that amount of wind, that's why, you know, big giant race boats change their sails all the time based off of the amount of wind, because you want your boat to be able to sail in the wind and not be fighting it the whole time. So it was good. Yeah, we had a good race, and then you know, we had high winds and big waves and sore butts at the end, like we always do. Not too bad though, you know. It's like, it's surprising how that size of a boat, a 30-foot boat rather than our 24-foot boat, makes a huge difference, the weight of the boat, you know, and all that. And also our water line, you know, we're up off the water another foot higher than our maybe even more than the J24. So being that much higher up off the water, you don't get as wet. Although everybody got pretty wet during this race, just because all the splashing, the waves and stuff, a lot of splashing up on deck.
Yeah.
But yeah, man.
Nice.
After that, then I went up to Lake George for the next weekend. We went our annual Lake George weekend, which is awesome. You know, we have the boathouse up there, and good to see everybody again, because we missed last year because the Governor's Cup was the same weekend. I did go antique hunting. There was one day when Tropical Depression Debbie made her way up through, you know, up through New York. And so we had Thursday night through Friday, most of the day Friday. It rained pretty good, pretty steady. So during that time, I was like, well, I'm going to go out and drive around, check out some antique stores. So I went to this really cool one in Lake George Village, which is like this old barn, two-story barn, that was just jam-packed full of stuff. But unfortunately, because it's right in Lake George Village, which is like a, you know, touristy village and also high end, there's a lot of really, you know, really wealthy people around that area. Almost everything there was out of my price range. I did get that. I did get video of that with the DJI Osmo. Got that on camera. So that was a really cool shop. You know, I didn't end up buying anything there. And then I went to like four or five different places after that. I ended up getting a couple things, but because it was raining so heavy, I was like hesitant to keep carrying the camera around, and I should have, because, you know, it would have been cool to see the few things that I got, but the other places I went to weren't as interesting, you know, visually. So it might be fun to show that, do that video.
Cool.
Yeah, it's like, you know, just like crazy, like, you know, so much stuff, everything hanging from the ceilings. And I almost bought this cool old like bread knife, but I decided against it. But yeah, I got a a double bit axe, a Snow and Neely axe, which is really cool, because Snow and Neely is out of Maine, and it was kind of a smaller, I think it's like 3.25 pound. It was hard to find, but like as I picked up the axe, and it looked like there wasn't any markings or anything on it, so I was looking at it, and then I saw like a little, what could have been a little stamp, a number stamp, so I started cleaning up a little bit and licking my thumb, you know, like wiping off the surface, had like some surface rust and stuff, and found some markings of the partial like stamp of the 3 and what looked like, you know, slash 4. So I couldn't tell what it was, if it was like a 3/4 or a 1/4, but I got that. And then I saw like just the remnants in the light, I could see the word main, M-A-I-N-E. And so I was pretty sure, like, if I could see that, you know, if it's a main axe and somewhere up in New England, it's most likely a Snow and Neely, which is a cool company. And they're, you know, it's a company that's still around. They still make axes and they're still in Maine, which is cool. So there are not a lot of companies like that are like that out of Maine. You know, all the bigger name companies are from other places up and down the East Coast.
Right.
But yeah, I got that. And then I got a little machinist clamp, which I always love to find those little metal clamps. And it was funny. I went to this one place and it was kind of a, you know, curated antique store, but they had like a couple areas where there were just a bunch of tools and then some bins full of like random metal stuff. And they were like, you know, anything in this bin's $2, anything in the bin's like $3. And so I went through the $2 bin and I found the little machinist clamp. And when I got up to the front, he was like, oh, where'd you get that one from? I was like, it was the $2 bin over there. He was like, all right, how about $1? I was like, all right. You don't need to undersell me, but okay. I'll tell you. I was like the only one in there, and it was all super rainy outside. And as a younger guy, he was just in a good mood, I guess, you know.
Yeah.
So I got that. And then I actually got a cool wooden bowl and spoon that I've been looking for interesting wooden bowls to go with our Viking reenactment stuff, you know, like our, just kind of some smaller eating bowls or some bigger ones, but all out of wood. And so when I've been looking at antique stores, most of the time when you find a wooden bowl at an antique store, they're like antique wooden bowls, so yeah, they're expensive, yeah, you know, like $60 or $80. I'm like, geez. So I found this one. It was a set of it was a bowl, like kind of a medium sized bowl, and then a kind of a big funky kind of ladle-y spoon that was hand carved, and they were $10 for the set. So I got that. So that was cool.
Good stuff. Yeah, we'll have to show what we can.
Yeah, yeah, show the stuff. But yeah,
so yeah, there was the storm. You were worried about your shop. I'll say real quick,
oh yeah,
before that, yeah. Buddy Guy and I, we were actually going to do the whole trail and go camping this last weekend. And mm-hmm. then, but with that storm, I figured, like, on Saturday when we were going to do it, it was done by then. But, the, you know, 2-3 days before that was, my power was out for a day or two. And, you know, mm-hmm. There was just so much stuff around on the road. I was like, the trail's probably a mess. Let's not do it. So we actually did the Susquehanna Trail.
Oh, right on. That's right. Yeah, because, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we went. I had one of the best, like, batch of fries I've ever had. It's Hell in a Bucket Brewing. It's a little place in, north of Columbia on the trail. It's Marietta, that little town. We actually ended up going to 3 bars in the same area, but at different times. Like, we kept coming back because the trail goes under a train bridge, and it was totally flooded over. So the trail was ended there. You couldn't get around and under.
Right.
And then where else? We went to Hell in a Bucket. We went to the Marietta Tavern, which we like. That's old school. And then we went to a really cool, what's it called? Let me see if I can find it. Oh, McCleary's Pub, right? A little Irish pub.
Right on. Yeah.
And, like, there's, you know, room outside. And when we have our bikes, you know, you're kind of looking for outside places so you can just kind of
keep an eye on your stuff
and sit near it at least. So they had a big, nice open area. You know, the outside looks pubbish, you know. Right. Like green and black and a lot of wood and stuff, you know.
Yeah.
Corner door. and then I was sitting there and I was like, and whatever. Guy went in to get drinks. I was like, I'll stay with the bikes. Yeah. And he goes in, and I'm just kind of enjoying sitting there. And then, one annoying thing. People, grandparents talking to their grandchildren out in public on phones. Cut it out. It's so annoying. Like, they can't see good enough. The connections are never strong enough. It's just like, you do not need to talk to your grandchildren for an hour here in a public place.
Yeah, right.
Is that, hi, Michaela, what do you do? What is that? Huh? Huh? Where are you going? And they'll talk about random family stuff for a little bit and then go on like that, like just baby talking, like, oh, stop.
Yeah, go somewhere.
Do that.
Go to your car or something.
Get a room.
Yeah. Get a room.
But just in public, like loudly old people yelling at their phone as on the other end is some grandchild who cannot communicate because they're 1.5. Like, stop. But so I'm sitting there, like, you know, making fun of them in my mind. And the guy comes out, and it's such a guy thing. I'm like, hey, as guy, I mean my friend guy, not just a dude thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, what's it like in there? Like, it looks very, like, you know, Irish pubby. Does it look? He's like, ah, it's not very, yeah, it's pretty. Eh, he's like, not much. He's like, there's no TVs or anything. I'm like, what's like an Irish pub? What's it like? Is it like? He's like, I don't know. He said, it didn't seem that nice to me. And so I was like, oh, whatever. But I made fun of him for him saying there's no TVs. I'm like, I understand, but it's not a sports bar. It's like it's an Irish pub, yeah, so right. He might not have a TV, or he might just have one or two, like, you know. So I made fun of him a little bit, and then I walk in, and it is the coolest little, like, Irish pub ever. You know, like, little bench seats and little tables and a great, big, beautiful wooden bar and, like, a lot of different people around. Like, it had enough people in to make it feel packed and, like, lively, but chill, like you would think an old pub should be, you know?
Right, yeah. Right, exactly.
I was like, this is...
Like, it's like, yeah.
It was perfect.
Locals, yeah. And, yeah.
Like, if I would have gone to an Irish town and seen that there, I would have loved it. Like, oh, this is exactly what I want. This is exactly what I expect. Right.
He's like, yeah, and you would have come out from the bar and be like, it's so cool in there.
Dude,
you know,
we gotta go without in. Maybe, you know, prompting. Think, hey, maybe we should sit in there. Like, I was just like, lock the bikes up. Come on, let's go ahead and sit in there. I didn't know how nice it was. Like, I would have wanted to get one of those corner spots and just enjoyed all the people there. Because it was a Saturday, and it was like 3 o'clock, so people were starting out, or maybe it was more closer to dinner. No, I think it was like 4 or 5 o'clock, so people were coming in for dinner, and people were starting to come in and hang out. So I definitely want to go back and actually go into to this what Guy thinks is a terrible little TV-less bar.
Guy, can't trust.
It was like so charming. TV-less. I was like, this is great. This is what you want. He's like, I don't know.
Did you guys camp? Did you do like an overnight?
Nah, because we didn't really have any place there. And you know, the trail ended anyway. But so we just...
Yeah, right.
We just were like, let's just go. And we'll go get lunch and we'll ride around and maybe go to another bar and hang around and ride around. So we just like had a whole free day.
Nice. That's
awesome.
We just
did whatever we wanted.
Yeah. No, that's great. Right on. Yeah. Sweet. Well, I have some bad news, unfortunately. My landlady... Betty Cook passed away on Tuesday. Yeah.
She's in her 90s.
Yeah, so she was 100.
Oh,
she had just turned 100 this year.
Yep.
Born in 1924. And when we started first renting this place, which I think was probably like 11 years ago or so now, you know, obviously she was just about to turn 90. She was in the late 80s, and her husband were still alive then, and her husband passed away a couple years ago. And then, she was, I just talked to her just a month or so ago, just asking her about, you know, kind of her plans a little bit and, you know, what the plans were for the property. Cause it was always kind of a weird thing to talk about, you know, like, hey, you're going to die, you know, like when you die, what are we doing? You know, cause we're renting this house. So it's like, how do you broach that subject? So I kind of, you know, I called her and I was like, all right, well, I was wondering, you know, I kind of basically brought up the fact that I was just kind of asking, like, is there any chance that maybe we could buy a portion of the land? You know, like where our house is and maybe like an acre around it or something. And so she was like, well, you know, you'd have to talk to Micah. And so we kind of knew through the grapevine that she had put Maryland Institute College of Art as basically like the property would be going to them in her will.
Oh, damn.
And so, yeah, that is what's happening. So we just found out she passed away. So unfortunately, we will be moving sometime soon, I guess, unless by some random miracle, Betty has like put us in her will for like part of the land. Like the O'Hara's could stay in the house, you know, like, but you know, it's not going to happen. So, so we're kind of in a little bit of a holding pattern right now, figuring, you know, obviously we have to wait until we're contacted by the executor of the will or by the, you know, by Micah, you know, because once like, you know, when things finish happening with the passing of Betty and all the logistics of what they do, then the will go out and people will get what they get. And then once Micah gets possession of the property, then they'll need to figure out what they're going to do with it. So I'm kind of, we're in a little bit of a holding pattern as to like what we can do. Cause we've been looking over the past couple of years, maybe, you know, basically the whole time we've been here looking to buy something,
right,
and just have not been successful. We put in a couple of bids in a couple of different places and we just can't afford to pay as much as other people are willing to pay when bidding, you know, when bidding wars happen and, you know, offers go high.
Yeah.
So, So before we left to go on our trip up to Lake George, New York, we had actually found a little property on the water down like on a little kind of inlet off of the bay in the Middle River area. And it's just a property. It doesn't have any house on it, but it said they were already like going through the process of getting all the permits and stuff to put a house and a shed on the property. So they've already like kind of gotten, you know, that stuff started. So it is set up for public water and public sewer already, which is good. So Nicole and I are thinking about maybe we were thinking like we can go and look at that. And we're looking at, you know, modular buildings and stuff. Mm. And we're actually thinking about maybe getting a 2-car garage with an apartment above it. So there are companies that will build those. And so getting that on the property would be kind of cool. Cause then it's like smaller, you know, we can do a 2-bedroom apartment up top of 24-by-40-foot garage. So then we'd have like a big shop space
like
downstairs.
Like a barn dominium kind of.
Kind of. Yeah. Right. Exactly. So we're looking at that. That's an option. And we're also looking at a few different rental properties around just to, you know, in case we get like something really quick that's like, hey, you got to go in a month. You know, we know that we can get out somewhere because, you know, the process of buying a house and, you know, we're just kind of a little dejected now because we've been trying for so long and waiting. But, and Nicole got her master's and she's been applying for jobs. And so it's like, everything is kind of all at once happening where we're like, we can't afford to buy a house, or you know, we can't afford to buy the type of house that we want to buy, you know, on like some property with maybe some type of shed so we can continue making things in the channel.
Right.
We did find a sweet property for rent up in right near you, like up off of the north, you know, that last exit, 23 off of 83. Mm. So it's like right, it would be like we'd be like 5 minutes down the road from you.
Oh, nice.
But we'll see. So we're kind of we're waiting a little bit because we don't want to like go anywhere yet, obviously, until we hear from someone about
what's happening.
So but there will be changes obviously happening for the channel. We'll have to move to some type of new shop, and if we have to end up getting like a place last minute that doesn't have a good shop space, then I may have to move some tools up to your shop. Might be shooting AOC from your space. We're gonna
have to clean it out.
Yeah, clean it out and get some things set up, and we'll figure it out. But you know, at least I would say to Nicole, I was like, well, at least Evan has a space. So, you know, if we need to shoot some stuff, I can build things there. I can come to your place and we can shoot for a while.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, no problem.
It's like you have the shop space. So whether or not I'm using your tools or my tools, we can still make stuff.
Right.
But yeah, so that's happening. So those of you who are listening who love the shop as much as I do, it'll be coming to an end soon. Unless, like I said, for some miraculous reason we end up keeping this place, but you never know. Can't rule it out until it's not there anymore.
Why did you should have led with all this? Why did we talk about sailing and pubs?
Because that's all fun stuff too.
You should have led with the I'm leaving, things are changing. That's the big news. Right. Jeez.
Yeah. Well, you know, you got to keep people to the end.
But they didn't know there was no teaser.
Tease with the title.
Okay.
Wait till
the last 10 minutes. 45.
Yeah. Minute 45.
It should just be called like the last 10 minutes are great.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Are interesting. No, the last 10 minutes are not great.
Well, it's everyone likes to hear news. Crazy news.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Big news. Yeah. But you know. It is what it is. I'm like sitting here looking out the window from my studio to the smithy and thinking, oh, what a nice little smithy.
Well, maybe you've been gifted the land, all of it.
Yeah, maybe.
It was a last minute change. Well, what did she say when you were talking to her about?
No, yeah, she said I'd have to check with Mike. She's like, well, Micah probably want to sell part of it off or whatever. Maybe you could talk to them. So I was like, well, that verified all the stuff that we thought that she had put in her will to Micah. So.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was crazy. Like I said, I just talked to her, you know, and I mentioned, I was like, yeah, you know, like when you pass, what's going to happen, blah, 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 blah. And then later in the conversation, she's like, yeah, well, you know, my passing, I might not be that far off.
I mean, it's one of those things.
You are 100, you know, like.
You're just trying to get answers for the place you live. It's not like she's like, it's some grandpa you're waiting around to get money from. You're just like, hey, we need to know.
Exactly. Yeah,
I have a family, and we have schools and jobs and everything. We need to. What's the next step?
Right. Yeah.
Because you will be gone in the next 5 years. There's no way.
You're gonna... Right, exactly. You're not, yeah. And that's the thing, too. It's like the other thing on compounding on top of all the other stuff that make it hard for us is that it makes it hard and also easy. Corinne is going to Carver, which is a magnet school in Baltimore County. So the good thing about that is it doesn't matter where we live in Baltimore County. She will go to that school. So we could live in a worse place with not a great high school, and she wouldn't have to go there because it's a zone school. Mm. But unfortunately, Baltimore County is expensive to live and to buy a house. So we've got to stay in Baltimore County. So we have to buy a house or rent a place in Baltimore County, but it's expensive, but it only has to be for 4 years. Right. So that's what we're trying to juggle this thing, So we got four more years. We have to stay in Baltimore County. And then after that we could potentially move to a different county, stay in Maryland, but move to Harford County or Carroll County, more options. We could definitely still stay around. I could still continue to work for BDS if that's the plan, if that's what the future holds for me. But yeah, so things will be changing. I was funny. I was looking through a bunch of comments today, and there were a lot of people commenting on the wooden sword build about how it's something that everybody should make. It's super cool, super fun, but you've got the shop full of tools and grinders and stuff that make it easy for you, but not easy for like normal people. So I was thinking it'd be fun to just make another, wooden sword, but just with hand tools, or mostly with hand tools, maybe bandsaw out something, or maybe it could all be done with hand tools, And a lot of people are asking that. And I was like, yeah, absolutely. It's like I make bows almost completely with hand tools, and that's just as much shaping.
Or you do it with power tools that everyone has, like a circular saw,
right?
And drills and
right. That's what I figured.
And then some hand tools,
hand saw and plane rasps. All that stuff can all be it can all be done to make the swords pretty easily. Like it's a fairly simple project. The hardest part of doing all the stuff with the hand tools would be the guard and stuff. It's just like, how do you, because I cut the guard in half with the bandsaw, and then I cut out the space and I fit it. But that can all be done with hands, with just regular saw. It'll take more time, hand saw and chisels and stuff like that. But shaping the whole wood, you could chisel. I could chop it all down with, get it to shape with a hatchet, and then rasps and planes and like all those things that are easy and cheap to get. So
I would,
it'd be fun.
You can go that way, or my idea would be to do it with the things that are most people already have to make it as easy. Like a lot of people don't have the hand tools,
right?
And they're a little intimidated by these like older, planes and stuff. And then I got to learn how to oil and do this and figure out, if you could do it with just what normal. You could have a few of those, and then
palm sander, circular saw, drill.
Little sanders or circular saw or things like that that people probably already have if they're interested at all, or could get for cheap.
Right. Yeah, right.
Yeah, or just mix it up. Be like, cheap tools to build this. Like, these are the easiest, most available tools, and some you probably have, and you might have to make it, to clean it up, you might need a palm sander or a hand plane,
And that's the thing too. I could show it, show the different steps too. Mm-hmm. Be like, hey, I'm doing this with a hatchet to shape the thing, but I could also use a circular saw or, a jigsaw, right? Jigsaw is cheap and easy, and then I can cut the bevels with a rasp, or you could also use a palm sander, if you have a high grit belt on, things that are easy. And, but because there's so many comments, and we've got that video is pretty popular, but there are a lot of comments on it that are like, this is not something everyone can do because not everyone has that same shop that you do.
Yeah.
But the design's super easy. That's kind of like, I guess, the main thing. Like, everyone should make one of these because they're fun, whether you do it by hand or whether you do it with those type of things. But yeah, I thought that'd be fun. But we'll see. We'll see how that goes, and we'll see where we go with the shop and the space. And it's a shame because the shop has so much character. It's got that old basement feel. So whatever our new space is,
we need to hustle up and get on the apocalyptic blade.
Yeah,
because I think you're gonna need your full complement.
Yep, Yep. We can do that. That's cool too. That's another announcement that we do have the Apocalyptic Challenge coming out, which we've talked about, but the video has gone up and that'll come out in a couple months. It's like what, middle of October is when that video comes out. So the Knife Maker, YouTube Knife Maker Challenge, Apocalyptic Build. That'll be fun.
All right.
Yeah, man. Cool. Any recommendations you got?
Just the show I've been watching. You know the FX show Welcome to Wrexham?
Nope.
It's Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds.
Okay.
They bought a British low-tier league team. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Sorry.
Oh, right.
A Welsh low-tier league team called Wrexham. And it's just really...
Soccer.
Soccer team. And it's... the baby's up. Oh, no. it's just really well done. I think there's 3 seasons.
Nice.
And I watched most of 1. And they're just really well done. It's funny and interesting. And you get to know this little Welsh town. And they basically, you know, save the team because they didn't have any money.
Right.
You know, and it was just
nice.
going to shit. So they're like putting money into it and learning about it. So it's, you know, these two Americans coming into this Welsh thing. They don't know much about soccer, but they're learning and they're passionate, and it's really good, really well done documentary.
Nice. Right on. What's that on? What provider?
FX. You can get it on Hulu.
Oh, that's right. You said FX. Okay.
All the stuff's on Hulu.
Hulu.
And yeah, the whole thing is you got these leagues, the premieres at the top, then you go down through all these leagues.
Right.
And then, but if you win your lower tier league, you jump up a league, which is kind of really interesting the way their football system works over there.
So that's kind of cool. Yeah.
It'd be like, the Shorebirds or something, some minor league team. If they won the whole league, then all of a sudden they're an MLB team, you know? Yeah, you're like, oh, cool. Like, wow, they were that good. They move up and your town is all of a sudden represented in a bigger league, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's not like in the States, you know, there's like the minor leagues, but just the players move. Right. So it's like, if you're really good in a minor league, then you can move up to a bigger league.
Yeah. And since it's in England and Wales, they have so many little towns. Every one of them have like a football club.
Nice.
So, you know, there's, I feel like total, you know, 100 teams or more, hundreds, little town has it. So they all have a chance to become whatever Arsenal or Manchester United or any of the huge ones, but you have to go up through the ranks.
Nice. Yeah. That's cool.
Yep.
Right on. I'll check it out. Cool. My recommendation this week is a new channel called Organic Archery. And the guys, he started his channel like 9 months ago. It's less than a year old. He's got 10 videos and he's got just over 12,000 subscribers. But I watched a video of his today called Making Otzi the Iceman's Bow with Modern Tools, which was really good. You know, it was like he didn't talk in the video. He just showed the bow making process and it was really interesting. And I thought it was well shot and, you know, close ups on things that were important to see. And he was like, throughout the build, he would like write down what he was doing on like the bow in pencil. It'd be like, you know, tillering, you know, by knocking the corners off, and then he would like do it. So a couple points throughout the process, he like wrote what he was doing, but and then at the end just talked and like, hey, thanks so much for watching, da da da, you know, like this is what I'm doing. But that was his first video and it was from 9 months ago. I think he's got like 300,000 views or something on it. So
it's awesome.
It's a good channel, and he has a really nice shop and is well lit, you know, and good views, and like that's important for videos, especially like how to, if you're showing someone how to make something. So but yeah, it was nice. So check it out, Organic Archery on YouTube. And if you want to see that bow, it's called Making Otzi the Iceman's Bow with Modern Tools. And it was cool. So in the beginning of the video, he just gave like the information about the dimensions of the Otzi's bow, you know, the length and the width and all that stuff. So he was basically just building it off of the physical dimensions of it. But he had some cool techniques and, you know, showed the process. So it was really cool.
Cool. Good deal.
It's good. Yeah. It makes me excited to be doing bow making demos and stuff at Maker Camp again this year. Yeah. So awesome, man. Cool. Well, everybody, thanks for listening. Make sure you don't forget to head over to YouTube, check out what we got over there. And, you know, subscribe if you haven't already and check out our videos and put comments on there. You can always shoot us an email as well if you have a comment or have a suggestion for the channel or the podcast. You can, at theartofcraftsmanship@gmail.com. And then you can follow both Devin and I on Instagram at @theartofcraftsmanship and @theartofcameraguy to see all what's happening behind the scenes, including normal day-to-day life and things like the Governor's Cup that I do and different stuff. And then if you want to support our channel and everything we do, you can go over to patreon.com/theartofcraftsmanship and support us there.
There you go.
All right, man. Well, go take care of your family. Hopefully your water heater isn't too beat up, and I'll talk to you next week.
All right.
All right, everybody. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll talk to you guys next time.
Fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app. Get packs of juicy red, green, black, or tri-color variety seedless grapes for $3.99 each. Then get tender boneless chuck roast or steaks for $4.99 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.